Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today I have a special guest with me. He's been on the show before on his excellent book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. None other than Roger Stone. He's a seasoned political operative, a pundit. He's a veteran of 8 national presidential campaigns. He served as senior campaign aide to 3 Republican presidents before leaving the GOP for the Libertarian Party. And as I've told you before, today we're going to be talking about his latest book, which I know a lot of you already have. If you don't, you need to buy it. And for anybody that might be thinking about voting for Hillary Clinton, The Clinton's War on Women, and it's an excellent book. It's a sizzler, so I'm happy to welcome back Roger Stone. Good morning, Roger.
Maria, delighted to be back with you.
Oh, my God. When I got this book, I looked at the size of it, and I said, oh, no. And then I picked it up and started reading it, and then it was like, oh, my God. And then it was like, I can't put it down. I think I got through the whole book in 2 days.
Yeah, it's really stunning because, of course, so much about Bill and Hillary Clinton has been suppressed by the mainstream media. There's so much on the historical record. The number of people who have come up to me and said, wow, I'd heard of a lot of these things, but I had forgotten about them. You know, it's interesting that more than 50% of the people who will be eligible to vote in the next presidential election were not old enough to remember any of the Clinton presidency, not the selling of pardons, not the Whitewater scandal, not Bill Clinton's dalliance with Monica Lewinsky or his selling U.S. military secrets to the Chinese for campaign contributions. They'd forgotten all of that and a lot more.
I know. I've been around a long time. I remember reporting Clinton's dealings with China when I was on terrestrial radio. But that was, you know, 17, 18 years ago.
It's really extraordinary because, in my opinion, that is what he should have been impeached for, not the relationship with Lewinsky, which, while distasteful, was at least consensual. In this book, The Clinton's War on Women, I really bore in on not Bill's consensual sexual affairs, not his affairs, girlfriends, mistresses, conquests. I'm really focused on something much, much darker, and that is his trail of sexual assault and rape. I identified at least 27 women that he assaulted, exposed himself to, or raped. And very sadly, Hillary Clinton has been not only an enabler, but more precisely, she has been the point person in the cover-up. She is the one who hires the private detectives who harass and intimidate these women who were unlucky enough to be Bill's victims. She is the one who denigrates them and tries to discredit them in public by calling them whores and bitches and sluts and trash, as if it's their fault that they were sexually assaulted by her husband.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, reading about some of the stuff that comes out of her mouth in your book is quite the eye-opener, especially the way she feels about Southerners. I'm sure you saw her a couple of weeks ago. She put back her fake Southern accent when she was speaking in the South.
Yeah, I mean, look, she's nothing like this grandmotherly image that she tries to present. She is not an advocate for women or girls and never has been. She is not a sweet grandmother. She's a foul-mouthed, short-tempered, exceedingly abusive, power-hungry, money-hungry, and she has been the driver in this sham marriage, in this dysfunctional marriage. The Clintons are in it together. Believe me, they're joined at the hip. She was a veritable co-president during his presidency. They promised us that in the campaign of 1992. You get two for one, remember they said?
Right.
And they were absolutely right. It was Hillary who fired the Travelgate office employees, had them accused of impropriety, literally dragged out of their offices in handcuffs. They were all subsequently cleared of doing anything wrong. Hillary merely wanted to shift the travel agency business to her cronies in Arkansas. It was Hillary who chose most of the cabinet, specifically Janet Reno as Attorney General and Donna Shalala at HHS. It's Hillary who inserted Webster Hubbell as the Deputy Attorney General, the first Assistant Attorney General who really ran the department, her former lover, her former law partner. So she is responsible for so much that happened during the Clinton years, including, as we detail in the book, the disastrous attack in Waco on the Branch Davidian Combine, in which 18 children under the age of 8 were killed in the firefight. She gave the final order. We know that because T. March Bell, the chief investigator for the House Committee investigating Waco, and Senator Arlen Specter, the chairman of the subcommittee that conducted the Waco hearings to determine what went wrong, both confirmed that it was Hillary who gave the final order, shoot to kill.
And yet, unfortunately, a lot of people blame it on Janet Reno.
Yeah, it's a falsehood. I mean, the truth here is Hillary wanted to get Waco out of the headlines because her first shot at Obamacare, then called Clinton Care, was on the boards, and she thought it was a distraction. But remember, this is a woman who claims that she's an advocate for children. In my opinion, she's responsible for the deaths of 18 children.
Right. Well, she obviously, after reading your book, she hasn't even had the guts to admit that Bill Clinton's not Chelsea's dad. When the pictures of her and Mr. Hubbell are almost, you know, in Italian we used to say, he looked so much like his father that he spit and she grew.
Yeah, I mean, this is important for a couple reasons. In all honesty, a lot of people say to me, look, Stone, why are you picking on a child? Why are you picking on a little girl? It's not her fault what her parents have done. Let's get this straight. Chelsea Clinton is 33 years old. She's an adult. She's a co-conspirator of the massive financial fraud, the multi-billion-dollar fraud going on at the Clinton Foundation. She's also, according to the New York Post, very much like her mother, short-tempered, foul-mouthed, very abusive, extremely entitled. They call her the princess behind her back at the Clinton Foundation. And she and her husband are exceptionally greedy. Now, she says she doesn't care about money. Well, I guess I wouldn't care either if I lived in a $10.5 million house, or if my parents had spent $3.5 million on my wedding, or if I had a $29,000 wedding gown. You can see why, of course, she doesn't care about money. When General Electric had a defense contract on Hillary's desk that required her approval at the State Department, they owned NBC, which conveniently paid Chelsea $600,000 for nothing. And guess what? They got their contract approved. Amazing.
Right. Well, there's all kinds of amazements just like that throughout your book. I did want to ask you, because several people have asked me when I let them know I'd be interviewing you, what do you think about, God, this sounds like such a loaded question, but what do you think about the candidates running for office right now and the fact that Donald Trump said that he fired you as his top advisor?
Yeah, obviously, I disagreed with that, and the New York Times and Politico both confirmed with five different sources that I had confided in them my decision to resign, and I had shared my resignation letter with each of them in advance. But it's neither here nor there. I am a strong supporter of Donald Trump. He has been a friend of mine for 37 years. I first met him when I came to New York in 1979 to organize Ronald Reagan's campaign for president, and he and his father were very active members that I recruited for the Reagan for President Finance Committee. I don't agree with him on every issue. I disagree with him on some issues, but I do think that he has the financial independence to be the first president in memory who would not be beholden to any special interest. The federal budget literally wastes hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. But I can tell you, having worked in the U.S. Senate as an assistant to Senator Bob Dole, having worked in the House as an assistant to Congressman Robert Steele, who was on the Budget Committee, having worked as a heavy-duty lobbyist, and having been a Washington insider for 30 years, every dollar in the federal budget was put there by someone. Mm. And that someone will protect that money and keep it there. So no career politician who depends on special interest campaign contributions will ever really cut federal spending, where there are billions of dollars of waste. How can we talk about cutting Social Security or Medicare when there's billions sitting right in front of us that is being wasted? Trump, I think, has the financial independence to do something about that. He is completely unbought and unbossed. What you see is what you get. His opinions are his own. He doesn't need the lobbyists or the super PACs or the special interests. I think he could be counted on, as far as the economy is concerned and the federal budget is concerned, to do the right thing.
Well, lately, I mean, some of the stuff coming out of his mouth makes me wonder if he's trying to shoot himself in the foot or not, especially, you know, with what he said about Muslims and wanting to put ID tags on them here in the United States.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between not wanting Syrian refugees because you're concerned that some of them may be terrorists. We now know that some of the terrorists involved in the horrific killings in Paris entered that country posing as refugees. But there's a big difference between that and wanting to register every Muslim. Registering people on the basis of their religion is deeply troubling to me as well. As I said, I don't agree with everything that Trump says. On the other hand, I can't picture Marco Rubio taking Hillary on frontally, right to the face. Mm. He's in the club. They belong to the same club. It's the insiders club. They'll never really challenge each other. And therefore, I think somebody, if you're going to beat Hillary, you've got to completely shed this idea that she's an advocate for women or children. You've got to expose the massive corruption and bribery that's going on at the Clinton Foundation. Mm-hmm. I'll give you one great example. Gaddafi may have not have been a great guy, but he was a U.S. ally. He was sharing his intelligence on Al-Qaeda. And women in Libya had the best standard of living in the African continent. Women were allowed to go to school. Women were allowed to appear in public without a veil. Women were allowed to choose their own husbands. Women had rights in the courts. All of that has been swept away when Qatar, the nation which wanted to topple Gaddafi, bribed Bill and Hillary to the tune of $2.5 million personally and $2.5 million to their foundation. And we toppled Gaddafi. We switched State Department policy, and we toppled Gaddafi, setting the women in Libya back 200 years and imposing Sharia law. Under Sharia law, when women are raped, they shall be stoned to death.
Right.
Their rapists, of course, pay no penalty at all because they're men. This is all done by Hillary Clinton in return for massive bribes. If the Republican candidate doesn't take Hillary on frontally on this issue, there is no chance that this will get covered. That the mainstream media will be forced to report on these things. And therefore, she can't be defeated.
Well, what did you think about Bernie Sanders in the first debate when he kind of made a joke about wasting time checking her emails? What did you think about that?
Well, first of all, he says he's a democratic socialist. That's like being a meat-eating vegetarian. I mean, in all honesty, Bernie's a buffoon. 30 years in the Congress. Don't tell us about veterans and the plight of veterans, Bernie. You've been on the Veterans Committee for 30 years. Last year, when 1,000 U.S. veterans died waiting for health care and the government covered it up so no one has been held responsible, Bernie Sanders sponsored that legislation for the cover-up. He's part of the problem. He's never, by the way, been off the public payroll his entire life. The man has never had an honest job. He's always been on the public tit. Mm. He talks a good game about Wall Street. He's unelectable. And when given his chance to go for her throat, because no, we do, Bernie, we do care about the emails. Because the emails show us the nexus between the Clinton Foundation and the State Department. They show us how everything on Hillary's desk was for sale to the highest bidder. If Bernie Sanders had any real concern about integrity and honesty in government, he would want to see those emails like I do.
Right, right. Well, you know, this isn't the first time she's done something like that. You know, reading your book, of course, takes us back to Watergate. And, you know, that was stuff I didn't know. I didn't know her part in that, or the fact she had gotten fired because she was a liar. So the list goes on and on. So who do you think is going to get the nominations?
Well, I actually think this is, it's kind of up to Trump. He's not going to be nominated without spending a very substantial amount of his own money. He hasn't done that yet. I'm not sure that he isn't going to do that, that he is going to do that. So far, his being a front runner is based solely on earned media, free media coverage. To his credit, he's the first person in history who's ever been able to do this. But I frankly think this nomination will boil down to three people. Ted Cruz is one, Donald Trump, and Marco Rubio. Now, Cruz and Trump are going to have to try to eliminate each other because only one of them emerges from the conservative Tea Party faction of the party.
Mm-hmm.
Marco Rubio has quickly buried Jeb Bush, whose candidacy was killed by Trump but is now on life support. And Rubio is clearly emerging as the establishment favorite. So I see a face-off here. I'm not sure who wins a Trump-Cruz struggle. So far, they have not tangled. They've kept a respectful distance of each other, but I do think Cruz is on the move. I do think he's extremely well-organized and underrated in Iowa, which will be the first contest. And I'm waiting, like many others, to see if Trump really dips into his pocket or not. He's going to need to if he wants to seize this nomination.
Do you think that Hillary has the nomination in the bag?
She probably does because this is an exceedingly weak field. Because of the role of the superdelegates that are played in the Democratic Party. We don't have the same thing in the Republican Party. It's a slightly different setup. There is a pending federal investigation into her affairs, which seems to broaden. And make no mistake about it, Barack Obama has no great love for Hillary Clinton in any way, shape, or form. Consequently, if she were to become indicted, which is entirely possible, then I could see good old Joe Biden being begged by the president to step in and save the party.
Mm.
I think that's entirely possible. There is no love lost between Barack Obama, or I should say the Obamas, and the Clintons. In fact, at the State Department, Hillary was put under very, very specific rules about how she was to handle matters pertaining to the Clinton Foundation, and she has systematically violated all of those agreements in terms of both transparency and in terms of prior approval, only making the administration look bad.
Mm.
So probably the man with a greater say as to her political future is Barack Obama, and I'm not sure what he's going to do. I don't think anyone knows.
Mm. Well, what was it that, was it one specific thing or just years of disgust that got you to become a libertarian?
Well, look, I don't rule out going back to the Republican Party. Teddy Roosevelt left and he came back. Mm-hmm. I could do the same. I have great sentimental attachment for the old Republican Party of Barry Goldwater. That was a party of small mm-hmm. government, a party of less spending, lower taxes, and more personal freedom. The party that wanted government out of the bedroom and out of the boardroom and out of your business. That Republican Party doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Both parties, in my opinion, have become the same.
Right.
They're the Wall Street parties. They're the parties of big money. They're the party of endless war. They're the party of erosion of our civil liberties, spying on our emails, tracking our phone calls. They're the parties of massive debt that we're going to pass on to our great-grandchildren as well as our grandchildren. They're the party of endless federal spending, increasing federal spending. The parties are the same. The nomination of Mitt Romney, who's a total fraud, who's running up and down the country saying, Ronald Reagan, Ronald Reagan. My friend, I ran Massachusetts for Ronald Reagan in 1980. Mitt Romney was campaigning for Paul Tsongas. Mitt Romney was not even a Republican in 1980. He's not a conservative. He's barely a Republican. He's just another Wall Street fraud.
Mm.
So his nomination to me was kind of the last straw.
Right.
I could not in good conscience see any difference between Obama and Romney because on every issue, war, peace, spending, debt, they were exactly the same.
Mm.
They try so hard to sound different for the debates.
Right.
But they're the same. And nothing would have changed. Had Romney been elected, nothing whatsoever would be different today than it is under Obama.
Hmm. Well, I can't disagree there. When I saw Romney running, I went into almost a state of panic. I have to tell you, I've been looking for words for such a long time and reading your book. I mean, first of all, you're an excellent writer. But when I saw you use the expression elite deviance, those were the words I've been looking for a very long time to understand the tactics used by the one percenters who always seem to get away with murder. And those two words are magnificent together.
Yeah, that was really coined by a sociologist. Elite deviance is the phenomena under which there are certain people in our society, approximately 1%, who are so wealthy or so powerful or so connected that the law just doesn't apply to them. They can use drugs, they can traffic drugs. They can have their own email server. They can misuse classified documents. They can have people murdered. They can have witnesses violently beaten. They can avoid any penalty for breaking the law. And this would apply specifically to the Clintons and the Bushes.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of time in this book outlining how the Bushes and Clintons line each other's pockets. The Clintons are not liberals or progressives. They're crony capitalists. The Bushes are not conservatives. They, too, are crony capitalists. Both of them believe in nothing other than making money for themselves and their friends. For example, the Clintons and the Bushes came together to form a nonprofit to raise money for Haitian earthquake relief. They raised $138 million. They spent approximately $10 million in Haiti. They pocketed the other $128 million. Then they closed the nonprofit, and they refused to answer any questions about where the money went. It's a classic example. The Bushes have really worked hard to rehabilitate the Clintons. Barbara Bush says that Bill Clinton is like the fifth Bush brother.
Right.
George W. Bush says that Bill is like his brother, which that makes Hillary his sister-in-law. This stuff makes me want to puke.
That makes me want to vomit, too. That news for you. Looking at that, but I like the fact that you didn't leave the Bushes off the hook in this book. You know, you make
it really
very clear.
Like my next book, which is already available for pre-order on Amazon. It's entitled Jeb and the Bush Crime Family.
Oh, I can't wait.
I chart the entire arc, Prescott Bush, the patriarch, making money arming Hitler. That's where the family fortune comes from, arming the Nazi war machine. Also, they owned a very healthy piece of a steel mill that utilized slave labor from Auschwitz. It made a lot of money at that as well. And then there's George H.W. Bush, who really tries five times to become vice president, 1968, 1972, 1974, 1976, and then finally 1980. As vice president of the United States, he oversees a secret operation to traffic millions of dollars of cocaine into the United States for sale in our urban areas, to secretly raise money to fund the Nicaraguan rebels, which the Congress had specifically outlawed. His accomplice in that, since most of this drugs are being run through Arkansas, is Bill Clinton. Clinton's taking a healthy piece. He's
right.
Skimming off the drug operation. This is missing in John Meacham's new biography. By the way, the only reason George H.W. Bush avoided indictment in that was that he stonewalled the prosecutor. He refused to be questioned, nor would he turn over any documents. That's also missing in Mr. Meacham's new biography of George Bush. The fact that George de Morenshield, who was the CIA handler for Lee Harvey Oswald in Dallas in November 22nd of 1963, is a close friend of George Bush's. When he is subpoenaed to testify before the House Committee on Assassinations, the very same day he kills himself with a shotgun, and found in his address book, on his inside breast pocket, is the direct personal phone number for George H.W. Bush, a man who, incredibly, for 30 years, says he can't remember where he was the day Kennedy died.
Right, the only person alive on the earth. The only person alive on earth. I mean, I can remember it like it was yesterday. So.
Well, in 1985, the government declassified a internal FBI memo. We now know where George Bush was. He was in Dallas. He stayed at the Sheraton Hotel exactly a half block from Dealey Plaza the night before the assassination. I don't know how you could not remember that, but he didn't seem to remember he was in Dallas that day.
Yeah, that's lucky him. Well, you know, earlier you talked about mainstream media giving the Clintons a pass. How about the fact, you know, that very few people knew, myself included, that Prescott Bush, George Herbert Walker's father, was a Nazi supporter before, well, while he was running for office? Where was the press? No American would ever have voted for somebody with a Nazi connection.
What's interesting, of course, is that all this is in the pre-internet days, but there is a clipping that I found from a nice newspaper in 1938 that proved that his bank was seized by the Truman administration, pardon me, by the Roosevelt administration, for trafficking with the Nazis, for treasonous activity. The Bush family were major financiers of eugenics. Eugenics is the practice of sterilizing inferior people to clean up the gene pool. Under, of course, the in the 30s and 40s, those who were thought to be inferior were mostly African Americans. This actually did come out in Prescott Bush's first campaign for the Senate in 1950, which he very narrowly lost. By that time, eugenics had gotten themselves a good PR man, and they changed the name of their organization to Planned Parenthood. But it's the same concept, the elimination, the sterilization of inferior races. Taken to the extreme, of course, you have Nazism. The Bushes and the Greys, their personal attorneys, have long associations with eugenics, which will be detailed in my upcoming book.
Well, can't wait to read it, I'm sure. I'm sure your publicist will send it to me. Let's get back to the Clintons and their war on women. How about the fact, which I did not know till I read your book, and I said, man, just when you think you know it all, how about the fact that Bill Clinton has a son who's African-American, who's never even met his father, who Hillary chooses to ignore? If she loves children so much, why wouldn't she care about the one child that we know of that is actually Bill Clinton's?
Yeah, she told us only weeks ago, Black Lives Matter. I guess they matter unless you're Danny Williams. He is the abandoned mixed-race son of Bill Clinton. Danny's father is Bill Clinton. His mother is Bobby Ann Williams, who was a cocaine-addicted prostitute that Bill trysted with on at least 13 occasions. She says that she is certain that Danny is Bill's son because Bill was the only white guy she had been with for over a year. When Danny Williams' mother took him as a child with his aunt Lucille Bolton to the governor's mansion to try to meet Hillary to insist that the Clintons do the right thing and acknowledge and support their son, they were turned away by Hillary. Hillary did give them the name of a private detective who she said could make sure the press inquiries stopped, although I don't think the Williams family was all that worried about the press. They were worried about eating.
Right.
The next day, an Arkansas state trooper showed up at the Williams shack where they were living and told them that if they ever went near the mansion again or the Clintons again, they would be thrown in jail and they would never get out. In 1999, the Star tabloid published a story which said that a DNA test proved that Danny Williams was not Bill's son. So I investigated that claim because it got picked up immediately by the Washington Post and then by Time Magazine as a fact. Howard Kurtz wrote it as a straight fact that Clinton had been cleared. I went to what he didn't mention was that the Star was owned by a man named Robert Altman, a Georgetown classmate of Bill Clinton's, a man who served in the Clinton administration briefly as an undersecretary of the Treasury and then as head of the RTC. He was forced to resign because he got caught tipping the Clintons off about the Whitewater investigation. And so far, to date, Mr. Altman has given the Clinton Foundation, the Hillary draft efforts, and the Clinton campaigns over $500,000. He no longer owns the Star. The Star is now owned by American Media, based out of West Palm Beach, Florida. They very graciously opened their files to me. There is no DNA test. There never was. Bill Clinton is Danny Williams' father. If you look at Danny's pictures in my book, mm-hmm. he looks exactly like his dad. So stop telling us, Hillary, it takes a village to raise a kid. Stop telling us how to take care of our babies. Mm. Danny Williams has never been acknowledged, supported, loved, nurtured. Bill Clinton's a deadbeat dad, and Hillary Clinton is a deadbeat stepmother. It's time for them to step up and do the right thing. Now, I'm confident Danny will be speaking out next year, probably at African American radio spots, about how he has been treated by the Clintons. Let's see how African American voters feel about that.
Right, exactly, because she's always looking to get the vote, get the vote. There's a lot of rumor, and I recall reading it in your book, too, that the reason we're not seeing much of Bill Clinton is because he has dementia.
Yeah, I don't think he's well, but as I detail in my book, I think this is the result of many, many, many years of cocaine abuse. Bill was a habitual user of cocaine when he was attorney general, when he was governor, presumably into his presidential years. He also was an avid smoker of marijuana. I have less criticism for that. But as I detail in the book, he not only used drugs, but he was involved in the trafficking of drugs. When Dan Lassiter, who was one of his biggest financial supporters and closest friends, was ultimately indicted on a drug trafficking charge, Mr. Lassiter retained a really, really sharp woman lawyer by the name of Hillary Clinton. And her law partner, Vince Foster, and lo and behold, they were able to convince Governor Clinton to give Mr. Lassiter a full pardon.
Wow. Well, isn't that a coincidence? Lucky break for them.
Amazing. I guess Lassiter just hired the right lawyers.
But here's the thing, you know, when Clinton obviously was a big drug addict, you know, a big cokehead, and yet all these terrible laws of injustice, locking people up for so long over drugs and, you know, forcing judges to give out, you know, standard sentences where they can't even use their own brain. Now the Clintons are admitting, oh, we were wrong to do that because she's running for office. But these people are such hypocrites that I can't even believe it.
Well, even more hypocritical in this election year is Jeb Bush. Jeb was an active drug dealer, as I say in my book, not only in college and boarding school, but also in his early days in Houston and Miami. But he's a big drug warrior. So again, elite deviance. Jeb can use drugs. Jeb can sell drugs. He pays no penalty. But if you're an African-American person in Florida and you get caught with a nickel bag, guess where you're going?
Right.
Jail.
I know.
So, and Jeb has always supported the tougher penalties for drug use and drug trafficking. Again, it's just total hypocrisy by the elites.
I know. I always say we're ruled by the worst among us. Roger, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, I want to, of course, continue this conversation. So stay with us. I'm speaking with Roger Stone, the Clintons' war on women.
Wow. One solid hour of commercial-free information thanks to you. The person who wants truth has the integrity and understanding to support it with your donation and subscription. Maria believes people can handle the truth and delivers it tirelessly with those with ears to listen. 14 years on the net. Won't you take a moment right now to commit to a subscription of your choice at www.maria.net. That's M-E-R-I-A.net. Over 1,100 hours of pure education all in one place, 24/7 and all downloadable. Knowledge is power. Sharing that knowledge is wisdom. Together we can change the world and create real hope. Now let's get back to the Maria Heller Show.
Welcome back. I'm speaking with Roger Stone. We're speaking about his latest book, The Clintons' War on Women. I guess we'll wait a little while for his next book on Jeb, but I can't wait. Roger, even when I spoke to some experts who consider they were experts on the Clintons and knew everything there was, they were surprised by this one when I dropped the bomb on them. that he was actually thrown out of Oxford for rape, for raping a 19-year-old girl.
Yes, Bill Clinton never earned a degree from Oxford. He lists a degree in his Wikipedia page and in his own biography, but that's because he got an honorary degree many, many years later. He was thrown out of Oxford because he raped a 19-year-old co-ed by the name of Eileen Wellstone. This was confirmed in both the State Department records and the Oxford University records. This is why I call him the Rhodes Scholar rapist. Bill Clinton never earned his degree, although 99% of the Rhodes Scholars graduate. Now, Bill says in his official biography that the reason he left Oxford was because he was accepted at Yale Law School. The problem with that is there's a one-year interregnum between the time that he's bounced out of Oxford and he begins at Yale. Cord Meyer, who was a very high official in the CIA, writes in his biography, and Christopher Hitchens confirmed this, as well as, I think, Roger Morris, so three different sources, said that Bill worked for the Central Intelligence Agency that year, infiltrating anti-war groups and rallies in Europe. Remember, this was the height of the Vietnam War, which may explain why he has had this charmed life when it comes to indiscretions and scandals in his own life. He clearly, at least for some portion of his career, if not all of it, was protected by the U.S. intelligence services. But yes, Bill Clinton, definitely the first rape that I can pinpoint in his long trail of sexual assault is Eileen Wellstone at Oxford.
Right. Well, it's interesting you would mention Cord Meyer, because his wife, Mary, was a longtime lover of John Kennedy.
Yes, he is certainly a man who was in a position to know all the secrets. But it also, once again, Cord Meyer also says that George H.W. Bush is affiliated with the CIA as early as 1961. Again, we learn this in declassified documents, so that when George Bush was appointed CIA director in the 70s, and he went for Senate confirmation, he said he'd never worked for the agency. In other words, he perjured himself.
Right. But, of course, that doesn't matter when you're an elite deviant.
Well, the point is, again, the Clintons and the Bushes have something in common. They have their joint relationship with the Central Intelligence Agency in common.
Right. Well, there also seems to be a string of murders attached to these people as well. You know, I think about LBJ and how many people he had murdered. And Vince Foster, of course, you know, especially the way you take it in detail in your book, there's no one that could possibly believe the official story of his death.
Although I think I do establish that, try to be completely objective, I don't believe the Clintons murdered Vince Foster. I do think they're responsible for other murders, and I'll come back to that in a second. But Foster, I believe, actually took his own life. However, Hillary did order his body moved, and she ordered a cover-up regarding the circumstances of his death. I say that for three reasons. In her own book, Hard Choices, which, by the way, she got a $14 million advance for, even though the publisher will never make $14 million on that book. Perfect example of elite deviance. She's being paid, essentially, for a money-losing proposition because of who she is. She says in her book that when she heard that good old Vince was dead, her immediate concern was that his office in the old executive office building would become a crime scene, and therefore federal investigators would have access to all of the most sensitive financial records of Bill and Hillary Clinton. That's why she ordered two goons who worked for her, a guy named Livingston and a guy named Kennedy, to move the body. Why am I sure the body was moved to Fort Marcy Park? Three reasons. One, even though Foster's body is found 30 yards down a muddy trail, it had actually rained several hours before his body was found. There's no mud or even dirt on his shoes. That's because his body was carried down the trail. Secondarily, there's carpet fibers all over his body, according to the FBI toxicology report. That's because they rolled him in a carpet to move the body. And then thirdly, a poor guy named Patrick Knowlton, just an average citizen, was driving down the George Washington Parkway Fort Mercy Park is really not a park. It's really kind of a lookout point that is right off the parkway. It's very small, where you can pull off the road and kind of look down into this deep ravine over the Potomac River. And because of the time of day, Knowlton knew that there was a very substantial traffic backup where the George Washington Parkway goes into the Beltway, which circles the nation's capital. And because he had to relieve himself, he pulled into Fort Marcy Park to try to find a bush where he could urinate. Unfortunately, he was there at the precise time that they were dumping old Vince's body. Although at the time he didn't recognize that. He said two men were there in a brown car with Arkansas plates, and they both looked at him menacingly. He thought there was about to be trouble, so he jumped in his car and he drove home to his wife. That night, he saw on television that Foster's body had been found, and that Foster had allegedly killed himself at Fort Marcy Park at almost the precise time that he was in the park himself. That's when he made a fatal mistake by calling the police.
Right.
And from that point on, Mr. Knowlton was harassed. He was accused of lying. He was accused of being a homosexual who was in the park for an assassination, which was completely false.
Right.
He was intimidated. He was told that he needed to change his story, that he didn't see what he said he was that he saw. He ultimately filed a lawsuit, which I reproduce in the book. So the Clintons definitely moved Vince Foster's body. Hillary basically confessed it in her own book.
Right. Well, you know, when I read that whole chapter, I felt so sorry for that man. And all I could think of is no good deed goes unpunished. And it's a story we hear so many times in our history that you would think it would be over.
Sure, he was driven to suicide by Hillary. She ended their romantic relationship, which was of long standing, and she publicly humiliated him in front of a full White House staff meeting, calling him a hick who was never ready to be in the White House. And only 2 days later, I think he took his own life. The pressure she put on him was enormous. She was making him carry the burden of various inquiries into their illegal activities. It was all his fault, she said. So it is only one example where death has followed these people around. The other classic example, of course, would be Jerry Parks. Jerry Parks was hired in Bill's reelection campaign for governor, his comeback campaign, because he was defeated once. And Parks was in charge of finding and suppressing the various women who might be problematic, either women that Bill had assaulted, like Juanita Broderick or Kathy Willey or Paula Jones, or women who Bill had jilted and might come forward and talk about their relationship, shattering the image that he and Hillary had a happy married life. So Parks obviously did a very good job. No women came forward. Bill returned to power as governor of Arkansas, and then he presented his bill after the campaign for $83,000. And Bill told him that he was reelected now and he wasn't going to pay the bill. So Jerry threatened to go public, not only with what he knew about Bill and his various sexual assaults, but what he knew about Bill and the trafficking of drugs during his governorship. And somebody drove Jerry Parks off the road 3 miles from his home and put several slugs in his head. Motive, means, opportunity. Yeah, I think that was the Clintons. That would be my supposition.
Right. And after reading
Parks' wife and his son both believe he was killed by the Clintons.
Well, I don't doubt it. And it seemed after reading your book that the police in Arkansas and his bodyguards, I mean, they knew all about his whoring around, his drugs. You know, how many times was this guy in drug rehab for sinus infections?
Well, and as you know, he did have a consensual affair for 12 years with the beautiful Jennifer Flowers. In 1992, that became public just before the New Hampshire primary. Bill and Hillary went on a very highly rated segment of 60 Minutes, which was very carefully and sympathetically edited by Don Hewitt, the producer, to save Bill's career. But in that, he claimed that he'd only been with Flowers once. That it was a failing and it had caused pain in his marriage. The problem with that was that Jennifer Flowers' neighbor across the hall was a man named Gary Johnson, and Johnson had set up a security camera because his car was being vandalized. But he didn't catch the vandals. What he caught was Bill Clinton coming and going. Unfortunately, he must have told somebody that he had this videotape because one night three Arkansas troopers showed up at his home and they beat him so badly that they left him for dead. They dislocated both of his elbows, both of his shoulders. They crushed his nasal passages. They lacerated his kidney, his spleen, and his lungs, and they left him for dead. The neighbors said that you could hear three men shouting, "Where is the effing video? Where is the video?" So the Clintons have actually used strong-arm tactics to have witnesses beaten almost to death. Johnson has still not had a psychological or physical recovery, although he is still alive. It is a classic example of the Clintons using Nazi tactics to acquire political office and wealth.
I'm telling you, some of this stuff is hair-raising, folks. But one of the other things that I was really stunned about, Roger, and not so much his sexual deviances, it was great of you to put a picture of him with Bill Cosby in the book, loved it, was the fact that through the Clinton Foundation, how many countries and how many people Hillary blackmailed to the point where she actually gave the Russians control over one-fifth of the uranium mining here, which, of course, we all know is used for bomb making.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary.
I mean, what kind of traitor is that? That's a traitor. Why was it she never brought up on charges? I don't understand.
Well, and by the way, the reporting on this story, the best reporting, is not by some conservative rag. The best stories were done by the New York Times in a very extensive series about how allies and business associates of Vladimir Putin were able to virtually corner the market in uranium by giving massive contributions to the Clinton Foundation in return for official acts of approval by Hillary Clinton that gave them that control. It's just one of many, many examples of the Clinton Foundation being used as a vehicle for the facilitation of massive bribes. It is one of the issues that I think is going to have to be raised if Hillary Clinton is going to be stopped from acquiring power again.
Well,
by the way, one thing I should have mentioned that I didn't earlier was that every one of these women who Bill assaulted, even though none of them were of substantial financial means, they all got an IRS audit after Bill became president, every one of them.
I know. What are the chances of that happening? But, you know, he was also violent with a lot of these women. Not only was he raping them, obviously he was, you know, the king of the blowjobs, but he bit a lot of these women. You know, a lot of this was happening in the side room in the Oval Office, which gave me a whole different vision in my head of the Oval Office. And Hillary being obviously bisexual, if not an out-and-out lesbian, which doesn't matter to me, but why pretend to be something you're not?
Well, I don't claim in the book that Hillary is a lesbian. Bill Clinton claims that. He's the one who told Jennifer Flowers that Hillary had actually been with more women than he had, which, of course, is numerically improbable. I think it's apocryphal. But the point, of course, is that it refers back to her very curious and strange relation with Uma Abedin, her close associate and traveling aide.
Right, who's married to, I like to call him Mr. Wiener, because he wanted to show his wiener off to the world.
We call her Mrs. Carlos Danger, but she's the only person in the history of the State Department who's been allowed to not only have a full-time position at State, where she has a full security clearance. We now know that she is one of two aides who went through all of Hillary's emails to decide what we could see and what we could not. At the same time, by the way, she was on the board and drawing a paycheck from the Clinton Foundation, so there's a one conflict. Meanwhile, she's pulling a third paycheck from Teneo, which is a lobbying firm associated with the Clintons, which represents several Middle Eastern governments in front of the State Department. So you have a triple conflict of interest. It's interesting that Bill Clinton is our only former president who's been a lobbyist. Most former presidents have done paid speeches. Ronald Reagan did. George Bush did. Bill Clinton certainly has. Richard Nixon alone is the only former president in modern times who took no honorariums for speeches, who sat on no corporate boards, who did no lobbying. He lived solely on the proceeds from the sales of his books, which he had written. The Clintons, particularly Bill Clinton, worked as a influence peddler, as a troubleshooter for corporations and countries that had problems. Meaning he was peddling influence and doing this through the company Teneo, another stunning sale of the presidency.
Huh. Well, then you get into Orgy Island, and they're hanging out with their best buddy, Jeffrey Epstein, who's a pedophile. And I'm seeing the names, so many familiar names in this book, like Alan Dershowitz as part of that little sex club. And some of the stories from the women. And what I find is, in your book, is all these women can't be lying because they all give the same description when they're questioned of Clinton's penis, which is unusual to say the least.
Well, they also describe him as becoming beet red. His face becomes beet red. He starts breathing heavily when he's in rape mode. The veins on the side of his head and in his neck stick out. Now, in many cases, these women have never spoken to each other, but they all seem to know these very specific details. And as you had mentioned, his signature move is biting his victim's upper lip. He virtually bites it through. I identified four women who he assaulted in this manner. Now, if you look it up online, you see that this is a classic disabling move for rapists. A woman stops trying to cover her genitals and now covers her bleeding face. It's also a not-so-subtle message to keep your mouth shut. I just wrote a piece for the Daily Caller entitled Bill Clinton, the Biter. This is chilling, chilling stuff. You refer to his very strange relationship with the convicted sex criminal and pedophile, Jeffrey Epstein. Mm-hmm. Epstein was identified by the Palm Beach police as having raped 33 underage girls. He got a slap on the wrist for that, even though he was trafficking underage girls to an A-list of pedophiles, which allegedly included celebrities, sports figures, scientists, other politicians, a former U.S. senator, a former governor, and the lawyer Alan Dershowitz. Now, Dershowitz has denied that vehemently, and he has actually filed a defamation suit against two lawyers who have represented one of the Epstein victims who makes these assertions. Those two lawyers have countersued Dershowitz. This matter is in the courts, and I've been following it very carefully. Mr. Dershowitz is losing this lawsuit. He is going to lose this lawsuit.
Good.
He insisted he would be exonerated. Not only is he not being exonerated, but he ultimately had to admit that he could not rule out that Bill Clinton himself had visited Epstein's Orgy Island, had been on Epstein's plane, had gone to sex parties, Epstein's home in Palm Beach, and that Clinton may have had sex himself with two 17-year-olds. There's a pending lawsuit that may yet compel Bill to testify as to what he was doing with Epstein. We do know from the FAA flight records he was on Epstein's plane 17 times, although the most significant one was when Epstein flew Clinton to Brunei, where he picked up a check for $2.5 million for the Clinton Presidential Library from the Sultan of Brunei, a well-known pedophile who keeps a harem of underage girls. So one pedophile arranged a massive contribution from another pedophile for the Clinton Library, and Clinton seems to take this money with impunity.
Well, there you have it, elite deviance. I'm never going to lose that expression. Roger, thank you so much for joining me today. I can't wait to read your next book.
I should say two things. You can buy the book by going to rogerstone.com, no D, rogerstone.com. You can obviously get it at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. My next book, Jeb and the Bush Crime Family, will be out January 26th, about 2 weeks before the New Hampshire primary. And you can pre-order that now on Amazon. The two books really complement each other. In the Clinton's War on Women, I give you the first half of the Bush-Clinton crime syndicate doings.
Mm-hmm.
In the second book, I fill in the second chapter of that with even more detail about how these two prominent American dynasties have covered for each other and lined each other's pockets.
Well, I can't wait. Thanks so much, Roger. You have a great day.
Thanks again, Maria, for having me.
Always a pleasure. Take care. Roger Stone, check out the book. It's excellent. And rogerstone.com. So all that glitters isn't gold, as my mama used to say. And as I always say, we are ruled by the worst among us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. If you're not a subscriber, please consider a subscription. Donate to the show. The show runs solely on listener support. I'll see you guys on Monday when I'm back with news of Planet of the Apes. Thanks.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.